right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today is March 6th, 2026. And our top story this morning, yikes, baby. Yikes, that February non-farm payrolls. To say it sucked would be to put it mildly. 92,000 jobs lost in the U.S. economy for the month of February. That's versus expectations for an addition of 59,000. But wait, there's more, says Billy Mays. It's not just those 92,000 jobs that were lost. Oh, no, you romantic fool. We also had a downward revision of 4,000 jobs for the month of January, from 130,000 added to 126,000. That's not so bad. But then we get to December. Downward revisions of 65,000 to December's previous non-farm payrolls, which were originally reported as a gain of 48,000, now a loss of 17,000. Oh, we're negative two out of the last 3 months. It's almost like the job market is pretty awful, says anybody who's been looking for a job for the last 2 years. We knew it was awful. All told, the net loss, if you take the 92,000, the 4,000 in January, the 65,000 downward revisions in December, we have a net loss of 161,000 jobs for the month of February. That is dreadful. The market was down before that news came out, and those losses are accelerating ever since. The unemployment rate ticked up from 4.3% to 4.4%. The participation rate ticked down from 62.1 to 62.0. A lot of people are just giving up, not even looking for work. The one silver lining to this big gray cloud of suck is that the U6 unemployment dropped from 8.1% to 7.9%. I don't know how that happens, the U6 dropping while everything else is up and the jobs are lost. But hey, that's the one good thing in the data. Now, normally when we do these jobs reports, we go look at full-time, part-time, and multiple job holders. But the annual changes to the population statistics hit in the household survey this month. Now, that doesn't affect the headline numbers, the 92,000 jobs lost, but it does affect the household survey, which reports full-time, part-time, and everything else. So we're not going to go through those because they're not really comparable. We're going to have to wait until next month to find out what's really happening with those. That's something that happens every year. It's not like we don't need the tinfoil hat for that. But let's talk about some of the sectors in this job market here. Very strangely, healthcare lost 28,000 jobs. Now, healthcare has been the big gainer category for years now, a function of the aging population. Apparently, there were a lot of strikes in healthcare in the month of February. I was totally unaware of this, but apparently that's a thing, resulting in a loss of 28,000 jobs. The decline in government jobs at the federal level continues, a loss of 10,000 there. Information technology lost 11,000 jobs. Trade, transport, and utilities also lost 11,000 jobs. The only major gain category was social assistance that added 9,000. Noticeably absent from this report was any big gains or losses in construction. Now, construction has been a category that we've seen a lot of job gains over the last couple of months, namely the big build out in data centers. We didn't see that in February. Maybe, just maybe, we finally reached our crescendo in this ridiculous speculative asset bubble in data centers, or maybe it's just a fluke in the data. But guys, in summary, the jobs report, it just flat out sucked. The job market sucks. Unemployment is rising. We're losing jobs. Oh, but wait, oil prices are rising, bringing back inflation concerns. High inflation, high unemployment, jobs lost. The 70s are back, baby. Dust off your bell bottoms, Grandma. Yeah, oil prices. The last I looked, they were breaking $86 for WTI crude, and Brent was pushing 90. But for all we know, in the 5 minutes since I hit go live, we've changed $3 or $4. But oil prices are continuing their move higher as the conflict in the Middle East continues. Natural gas prices continue to be volatile. We've got a couple of stories out of the Middle East now. I'll be honest with you, the rate of new headlines being generated in the Middle East is down somewhat from the ridiculous pace that they were at the start of the week. Maybe we're reading too much into that there. But we have the United Arab Emirates is actually considering freezing Iranian assets due to the Iranian drones falling on their cities. Dubai in particular is being hit an awful lot. Now, that's interesting because Dubai is a wretched hive of scum and villainy when it comes to financial crimes. I mean, you take your pick of whatever financial fraud we've been talking about on this channel for the last 3 years. It touches Dubai one way or another. A lot of the money that has been financing the terrorism, financing the illegal oil trade from Iran has flowed through Dubai. So if the UAE is pissed enough about the drones killing their people, which I'd imagine they are pretty unhappy about that. I know I'd be. Well, then maybe freezing those Iranian assets, that could further strangle Iran economically, who was already on death's door. Remember all those protests at the beginning of this year and all the protesters that they slaughtered, estimates as high as 30,000, was mainly due to the currency collapse because Iran is having such a hard time getting its oil to market. The little oil that they are getting to market is flowing through the UAE. Now, we have an article in the Wall Street Journal that talks about a change in the tactics on the front line, and this does affect the economics of things, guys. The rate of missile attacks from the Iranians is way down since the start of the war, but the rate of drone attacks is unchanged. It's even higher. They've gone through a lot of the expensive missiles. A lot of the launchers have been taken out by airstrikes, but the drones are still getting through. And that's important because the U.S. interceptors are very expensive, and using $5 million Patriots to knock down $20,000 Shahed drones, not really good math there. And so there's another article in the Wall Street Journal about Ukraine trading anti-drone systems and even anti-drone personnel to go and defend the Middle East countries that are getting drones hit by drones in exchange for replenishment of U.S. Patriot missiles that they need to defend themselves against the Russian hypersonic missiles. When it comes to knocking drones out of the sky, the Ukrainians are better at that than anybody. They're offering their help, but they want missiles in exchange. It's not a bad deal, to be honest with you. So that is going on this morning. We've got earnings from Marvell. That's a chip maker. Big beat. That stock is ripping. Not really surprised. The ongoing CapEx spend with big tech. We've got SoftBank is trying to borrow $40 billion. Why? So they can just give it to OpenAI. That this is in addition to the $30 billion that SoftBank just gave them and the $10 billion before that. Masa-san over there in Japan is desperately trying to blow into the AI bubble, even as Jensen Huang just yesterday signaled that he was pulling back, that there would be no more cash for OpenAI and Anthropic after this latest round. SoftBank is already up to their eyeballs in debt that they've borrowed against every asset that they have on their books in order to pump money into OpenAI. So what are they going to borrow against this time? I don't know, but one of these days, we're going to have a headline on one of these morning lives about SoftBank going bankrupt, and I look forward to that day, but it's not today. We've got a 100% loss on a private loan from Blackstone. Now, this is interesting. We talked about this one briefly at the end of the show yesterday because the story was just breaking minutes before I went live, but this private loan to an Amazon aggregator, this company that just buys up Amazon shops and takes all their inventory and then somehow magically is supposed to turn a profit. Just December, they marked this loan at par value, basically 100% value. And then 3 months later, they knocked the thing down to zero. A 100% loss in 3 months. It's almost as if private credit just arbitrarily makes up their valuations out of thin air. And it's pretty much a binary result. It's either worth 100% or it's worth none percent. That's your choice in private credit. And may the odds be ever in your favor. Meanwhile, in Europe, it appears to be even worse. We got a story in Bloomberg about European private credit this morning. Some 150 companies have had the keys handed over to the lenders because they couldn't service their debt. But the good news is we have no idea how big the problem is. Oh, good. Guys, it's a rough one out there today. We've got a lot to talk about. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button. And don't forget your tickets to George Noble's Best Stock Idea Summit, which will be next Wednesday, March 11th, where yours truly will be presenting along with a host of other investors. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Right now, the S&P 500 is sharply lower, 94 points in the red, 1.37%, much of that coming right here in the immediate aftermath of the jobs report. The market did not like it, and there is no Fed rate cuts to the rescue here, not when oil prices are going vertical because the Strait of Hormuz is blocked. So there's not really an out here, if you will. It's like Jack playing golf. You're in the sand behind a tree near the water. Just take the double par and move on, Jack. Right now, the Dow is down 662 points or 1.39%. Again, much of that coming immediately following the jobs report. And the NASDAQ is off 426 points or 1.7% lower. Stocks down across the board. The one thing that's not really moving, we'll mention this briefly, the South Korean Kospi Index, it had a very small move, just 0.02% yesterday, barely budging from the open. And that's not bad considering the wacko nature of the South Korean index over the last few days. We've been covering that one this week. So maybe the volatility is over, or maybe it's just the calm before the next wave. We'll just have to wait and see. The U.S. dollar is moving higher here, sharply higher, 31 basis points, 99.35. The dollar's been strengthening all week. It looks like immediately following that jobs report at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time, the dollar took a little bit of a dive. Maybe some people looked at that jobs report and said, oh, weak jobs report, job losses, the Fed is going to cut. And then 10 minutes later, they looked at the oil market and they said, oops, never mind. And they started bidding the dollar right back up. You can't really cut rates when oil prices are going vertical, dragging inflation higher with it. And so right now, the Dixie is pretty volatile, but stronger. Looking over at the bond market, this one's been all over the place this morning. Not really a lot of movement in either direction. Oh, look, there's my tinfoil hat. That's interesting. Okay, anyways, the ads that are popping up on investing.com. The 30-year yield, 4.758, down or up by a half a percent point. Let me do this one over. 4.758%, up by a half a basis point for the 30-year yield. The 10-year is at 4.159. Higher by a point and change. The two-year, 3.604, a half a point higher. And the one-month is at 3.699, down by a fraction of a point. Bonds going a whole bunch of nowhere this morning. Bitcoin is having a bad morning as well. $68,800 is priced on Coinbase, off by $2,000. We probably got some risk off going on this morning. Also noteworthy, we talked about this level yesterday, right around $74,400. That is the previous low from Liberation Day panics, and support becomes resistance once broken, and we see that playing out here. So this is an ugly chart for Bitcoin this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, guys, commodities are just all over the place the last couple of days. So blink and you missed it. Just be careful on leverage. It's all I can tell you. As always, spot gold, $5,088. That is higher by $8 or 0.18%. Gold initially caught a bid on that jobs report, and it seems to have evaporated. April COMEX gold futures are at $5,101, higher by $22 or 0.45%. Spot silver at $82.61, higher by 35 cents or 0.43%. May silver futures on the COMEX are at $82.78, higher by 60 cents or 0.7%. I like to see the small candles on silver. Please, these small moves, let's keep those coming. I've had enough of the volatility, but either way, I like the shiny. And we'll have some more to say about silver in just a moment. Let's first touch the other commodities. We've got copper barely moving, down 0.1%. Platinum is off by 0.7%. Palladium is off by 0.38%. Big move in WTI crude this morning, currently higher by 8.2% at $87.63. We went as high as 88.23 this morning. That's for April WTI futures. Brent crude is pushing 90 here at 89.88. That's higher by $4.50 or 5.25%. And natural gas is higher too here in the U.S., up by 4% for April natural gas futures. All right, we've got a lot of commodity stories here. Let's talk about a few of them. This one from my friend Bob Coleman at Profits Plus ID on Twitter. If you are a gold or silver trader or stacker, you should definitely be following Bob on X. He's been a frequent guest on the channel. And he talked about this one yesterday. We got margin reduction yesterday. The COMEX and the NYMEX alert, gold, silver, and platinum futures margins were decreased effective after the close today. So after the close today, they will be lowering margins, gold margins dropping by 22%, silver down by 22%, and platinum down by 13%. Now, Bob and I were talking about this in our spontaneous live stream that we did on Wednesday this week, that we think one of the reasons why silver has become so volatile, besides some shenanigans over at Jane Street, is that all of these margin requirements have caused the open interest to drop substantially. There's just fewer market participants, and in an illiquid market, the price swings become more violent. And so typically they raise margin requirements to reduce volatility, but in this case, they raise them so much that the cure actually was the disease. The margin increases were causing the volatility versus fixing it. And here we are just a few days later, they're reducing it. And Bob thinks this move to lower margins may be a desperate move by the exchanges to try to stay relevant, as we've been seeing a lot of metal leave the exchanges, not just in the US, but also overseas in Shanghai. So maybe this could be sowing the seeds for the next move higher in precious metals. Thank you, Bob, for the timely update last night. Looking at the oil chart, guys, this one kind of puts it in perspective. We are seeing the biggest move in oil since the start of this conflict here. Big old green candle here up almost, well, this is saying up 11% now. Again, we were up 8% a few minutes ago. The delays between the two platforms, it's all over the place here. But one thing is for sure, the longer this conflict goes on, the higher oil will go. I mean, we closed on Friday at $67, and here we are at $87, a $20 swing in 5 days of trading. We will most likely be talking about $100 oil at this rate by the middle of next week. All right, so we started this conflict with an oversupplied market. There was lots of oil in storage that cushioned the initial blow, but the longer this thing drags on, the worse this is going to get, and the traders are starting to sniff that out. Also, looking at the natural gas market, that is higher as well by about 4.4%. Not as big a move as oil is making today, but natural gas, in particular in Europe, this is Dutch TTF gas futures, the European benchmark, they saw most of the move in the initial hours of the conflict. Whereas oil was a little slow to react, natural gas reacted right away. And so now oil is playing catch up. Natural gas is higher, but not nearly as much as oil is today. All right, let's talk about the jobs report. Here we go. The employment situation summary from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. In other words, the non-farm payrolls report. Total non-farm payroll employment edged down by 92,000 in February. And the unemployment rate changed little at 4.4%. That is up from 4.3%. So that is a big blow here. The loss of jobs when the market was expecting a gain of about 59,000. Let's talk about where the jobs were gained or lost. For that, we go to the establishment survey. Healthcare employment declined by 28,000 in February, following a large increase in January of 77,000. Offices of physicians lost 37,000 jobs in February, primarily due to strike activity. And that was news to me this morning. Apparently, there have been some strikes at hospitals and doctors' offices. Okay, so that caused a pretty big swing in the jobs numbers. And if that really was due to a strike, you would expect that to correct in later months. Employment and information continued to trend down in February, loss of 11,000 there. The federal government employment continued to decline, down by 10,000 for the month of February. Ongoing layoffs and people taking the voluntary separation packages with the government, that is still an ongoing thing. Employment and social assistance was the one silver lining here, or the one positive number, up by 9,000, driven by individual and family services. Transportation and warehousing changed little, a loss of 11,000. Jobs lost in couriers and messengers. And then they're saying employment showed little change month over month in major industries, including mining, quarrying, oil and gas extraction, construction, manufacturing, wholesale trade, retail trade, finance activities, professional business services, leisure and hospitality, and other services. And the one thing that stuck out at me there was construction. We have seen significant gains in construction for the last few months. That was all in data centers. We're no longer seeing that. So either the data center construction is starting to fade, which we don't really see that in things like Marvel earnings or anything like that, or maybe the home builders are laying off so many people that it's negating any job gains in data center construction. Either way, construction, not the boost to the job numbers it used to be. And then, of course, the salt in the wound is the change in total non-farm employment for December, revised down by 65,000 from plus 48K to minus 17K. Change for January, revised down by 4,000 from plus 130 to plus 126. All right, so let's look at some of these numbers here. We're going to hit refresh because, yep, there we go. Now, look, guys, these are the non-farm payrolls. Going back to last year, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the last 12 non-farm payrolls reports have now been negative once you factor in the downward revisions. And again, the downward revisions never get any attention in the press. They're always like, oh, my headline number was so good. The economy's stronger than ever. And then they quietly, downwardly revise it over and over again. In particular, like the October number, loss of 140,000, that was dreadful. And look, there's 92,000 for February. That's just the initial print. We could see 2 months of downward revisions take this thing even further. And of course, that December number was pushed negative as well. This no hire, no fire economy, just dreadful for recent college graduates, young people in particular, taking it on the chin from this job market. Looking over at the unemployment rate, that ticked up from 4.3 to 4.4 after 2 months of declines coming off of the government shutdown. I was very skeptical of a lot of these numbers coming out of the government shutdown that I suspected they were fudging the data somehow. Maybe they imputed or they guessed a lot, and then we finally got these downward revisions to correct for those mistakes. But either way, we can see unemployment trending in the wrong direction now. U6 unemployment continues to decline. That's something of an outlier considering how awful all the other statistics were in this jobs report, but currently reported at 7.9%, down from 8.1 in January and all the way down from 8.7 in November. Now, U6, that measures people who are unemployed and people who are underemployed or marginally attached to the labor force. It captures more people because the actual unemployment rate is very specific about who counts and doesn't count. So this would suggest the job market is getting stronger when all the other data points say otherwise. And last but not least, labor force participation rate ticked down to 62.0% from 62.1%. That's the lowest it's been in a year. People are either aging out or just outright giving up on trying to find work. Not a good sign there. All right, back on the story going on in the Middle East. And again, guys, this is the biggest event in finance right now. So sometimes, as much as I try to avoid politics, geopolitics is a major input into the world of finance and economics. So we have to cover this story to really understand what's happening in markets. The UAE explores freezing Iranian assets to punish Tehran for attacks. Any crackdown on Iran's shadow financing networks in the Gulf state would strangle Tehran's access to foreign currency and global trade. The United Arab Emirates is weighing freezing billions of dollars of Iranian assets held in the Gulf state, according to people familiar with the discussions, a move that could sever one of Tehran's most important economic lifelines. If the UAE goes ahead, it would significantly curb Tehran's access to foreign currency and global trade networks, as its domestic economy, already buckling under inflation, is now engulfed in military conflict. UAE authorities are weighing several measures to dismantle illicit Iranian operations, officials familiar with the matter said. They range from freezing the assets of UAE-based shadow companies used to mask trade to a sweeping financial crackdown on local currency exchanges, which are used to move money outside of the formal banking channels. If the UAE decides to move on Iran's shadow financing empire, a prime target would be accounts affiliated with the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the powerful group responsible for defending and perpetuating the regime, the officials familiar with the discussion said. Tehran has allocated a growing portion of its oil for the IRGC, as well as other parts of the defense and security complex, to sell on the international market, according to Treasury publication last June. And guys, this kind of touched a personal note for me, because one of the biggest stories I ever broke on this channel was the Hyperscale Nexus story, which was a story about an AI startup in Dubai that was supposedly buying thousands of these NVIDIA chips. And really, it ended up being a front company that was laundering money for the Kinahan cartel, the biggest fentanyl cartel in Europe. And the reason why I bring that up now, besides the fact that they were based in Dubai, right in the middle of the UAE, but Daniel Kinahan is currently believed to be hiding in Iran, where he is laundering money for Hezbollah. And if he's laundering money for Hezbollah, it's a good bet he's also laundering money for the IRGC. And without going into too much detail, I can tell you my research on the subject has touched on the Iranian oil trade, something we may have more to say about in the months ahead. So the UAE has been helping the Iranians finance their bullshit all over the world for years. Now the Iranian drones are landing on their heads, and they're weighing the possibility of not helping them finance it anymore. Well, good, But, you know, where the hell have you been for these past few years? Anyways, that's going on. Even as that's going on, we've got this one in the Wall Street Journal. Its missile threat degraded. Iran is taking fewer shots, but at more targets. As Tehran's ability to fight back with its most powerful weapons is weakened, it widens the war with low-cost drone attacks. The U.S. and Israel are betting that crippling Iran's missile arsenal is key to crushing the regime's ability to fight back, but Iran still has other ways to retaliate. Most important is its arsenal of low-cost drones. It continues to launch drones by the hundreds at Arab neighbors across the Persian Gulf, spreading fear, roiling markets, and disrupting shipments of oil and goods from a region that's crucial to the world's economy. And they've got some statistic here. Again, these are Pentagon numbers, so, you know, I guess take it with a grain of salt. But Iranian ballistic missile launches were down 90% from the first day of the fighting, the Pentagon said Thursday, and drone attacks fell 83% from the first days of the campaign. It's a good bet there's a fair amount of fudge factor going on there, right? That's a U.S. military talking point. But you can see here, drones is quickly becoming the bigger threat versus missiles. And that's what gives us this story. Ukraine offers help downing Iranian drones in exchange for Patriot missiles. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is trying to leverage his nation's war savvy to keep it on the world's agenda as the Iran conflict increasingly absorbs the attention of President Donald Trump, putting the U.S. brokered peace talks with Russia on indefinite hold. On Thursday, he offered to share his country's expertise in protecting against explosive-laden Iranian drones, which are swarming the defenses of the U.S. and its Middle East allies. Our appeal is very simple. We would like to fill our deficit of Patriot missiles and supply a certain number of interceptors, Zelensky told reporters in Kyiv. For the past 4 years, Ukraine has faced daily strikes with dozens or often hundreds of explosive-laden Shahed-type drones, which are now also produced in Russia. This is the same type of weapon which has been used in attacks in the Middle East, EU Foreign Affairs Chief Kaja Kallas said Thursday in Brussels ahead of a meeting of EU foreign ministers with their counterparts from the Gulf Cooperation Council. So Ukraine needs Patriots. We need help downing drones. It seems like a deal is in the works here. Nothing from the U.S. side on this, just that Ukraine has made the offer. I would also add the U.S. is also short of Patriots because we're burning through a lot of our Patriot missiles. In particular, the Ukrainians want the PAC-2 missiles, which have the blast fragmentation warheads on them, versus the PAC-3s, which is a kinetic kill missile. Slight difference there, but that is now on the docket here. You can see all of these geopolitical stories starting to overlap. All right, also going on this morning, we won't spend too much time on this one. Marvell stock soars as robust AI-driven demand drives an earnings beat. It was a good quarter for Marvell. They're a chip maker. The chip makers continue to do very well, mostly because of this ongoing game of CapEx chicken between the Mag 7 companies. Marvell stock ripping this morning, up 10.9%. Let's refresh this because everything's all over the place. Okay, good thing. Up even more, 12% now, $84.86 for Marvell. Having a great morning, but year to date, stock is actually flat here, pretty much unchanged. So all Marvell has done is recovered losses from the beginning of the year. Over the last 5 years or so throughout the course of this bubble, Marvell is up about 100%, catching a double since the onset of the AI mania. Speaking of the AI mania, Masa Son is getting increasingly desperate, trying to blow into it as he finds himself having a hard time fulfilling his Stargate pledges. Oracle has become the punchline of a joke. NVIDIA says they're not going to pump any more money into OpenAI and Anthropic. And so Masa Son is out there trying to buy and borrow another $40 billion. SoftBank seeks record loan of up to $40 billion for OpenAI stake. And that's pretty much the story here. This guy is already levered up to his eyeballs. He has borrowed against anything and everything he could get his hands on. And why does he want to borrow the money so he can just give it over to OpenAI in exchange for another stake? So realistically, any bank that would underwrite this loan is effectively making the loan to OpenAI. Why would they do that? OpenAI loses money. I don't know. Maybe he's promising them a quick turnaround. He's saying, oh, don't worry, we're just going to cash out as soon as the IPO hits later this year. We'll use retail investors as bag holders and exit liquidity. Maybe that's his plan, but that's going on this morning as well. All right, on to private credit. This story broke yesterday. We touched on it briefly. We have more detail now. BlackRock slashed private loan value from 100 to zero. All right, just a slight decline there, just a little bit. BlackRock slashed the value of a private loan to zero at the end of 2025, just 3 months after assessing it at 100 cents on the dollar, marking the second sudden wipeout recently hit its private credit division. It's not the first time that a loan has gone from par to nothing in 3 months. The roughly $25 million loan to Infinite Commerce Holdings, a so-called Amazon aggregator that buys up online sellers of products from spa treatments to light bulbs, is now worthless. BlackRock TCP Capital Corp reported in fourth quarter filings released last week. The wipeout was part of a broader loan losses that BlackRock signaled in late January when it disclosed that the private credit fund was preparing to mark down the net value of its assets by 19%. All right, so this data release, it's slightly old data. This is a story that just broke about data that was hidden in a release about 2 months ago. So there's some people are complaining that this is old news. It's not really old news. It's just aged data that people finally noticed how bad it is. While a small loan in a troubled niche, its abrupt markdown highlights what critics describe as a key fault line in private credit: the lag between valuations on illiquid loans and the deteriorating performance of the companies behind them. Zips Car Wash was valued near par by its private credit backers in the months before it sought bankruptcy protection. And in November, BlackRock TCP slashed the full value of loans it extended to Renovo Home Partners, a struggling home improvement company. The write-off comes just months after Infinite Commerce merged with another aggregator and BlackRock debtor, Razor Group. That's in August, creating the new debt structure valued at par. Previously, BlackRock had valued loans to Razor at deeply distressed levels. Now, this last paragraph is important here because this shows the shell game that private credit was playing, that BlackRock was playing here. All right, you had this Razor Group. Their debt was about to go bad. All right, it's saying here that they had valued the loans to Razor at deeply distressed levels. All of a sudden comes along Infinite Commerce Holdings, and they merge with Razor Group. All of a sudden, all that debt gets rolled into a new pile of debt, and BlackRock magically values that at par. So what they did was they hid the delinquency in Razor by merging it with this other company that owed them millions of dollars. All of a sudden, the loan goes back to par value. They hid the losses. It worked for about 4 months, and then it didn't. Now Infinite Commerce Holdings gets written down to loans. Extend and pretend, shuffle around, move the shell. All right. And again, to go from 100% to zero overnight just goes to show you cannot trust the marks in private credit. The values, the loan to value ratios that they spout off, they're saying, oh, don't worry, it's only got a loan to value ratio of 70% or 40%. Well, the value could go from 100% to zero overnight, which means your LTV is a meaningless statistic. I've been warning about private credit for over a year. The news continues to get worse. And then we've got this one. In Europe, apparently in Europe, it's even worse than it is here. Direct lenders have taken keys to nearly 150 companies in Europe. And when they take the keys, that means they're basically, they have defaulted on the debt. They say, we're not going to pay you back here. You now own the business. Good luck to you. Some 146 companies in Europe have ceded control to direct lending funds after they could no longer afford to pay their debts, according to Goldman Sachs. The findings offer a rare glimpse into one of the more opaque areas of the $1.8 trillion private credit market. Unlike U.S. peers that run business development companies and publicly disclose portfolio valuations, which we just talked about, those publicly disclosed valuations are bullshit anyway, but at least they say something. But unlike them, European direct lending funds generally do not publish detailed information about the value of their holdings publicly. So they're even less transparent than the opaque garbage here in the U.S. As a result, outsiders have limited visibility into how much stress, if any, may be building. In other words, they have no idea what's going on in these loans. In extreme cases, direct lenders effectively take the keys from the struggling borrower. The lender becomes the owner of the company and typically writes off part or sometimes all of the outstanding loans in exchange for equity. While converting debt into ownership can help lenders recover more of their investment, direct lending firms are aiming for steady interest income, not the responsibility of running businesses. The Goldman analyst chronicled leveraged buyouts financed by senior private loans since 2017. They showed that around $38 billion of those loans to 150 companies became troubled, Of those, four became insolvent and were forced to liquidate, and the rest involved debt for equity swaps. And I love this paragraph here. While the aggregate size of the underlying market remains unquantified, making it difficult to determine the true rate of distress, the study offers one of the most comprehensive snapshots to date of strain in Europe's rapidly expanding direct lending universe. And given the market's lack of transparency, Goldman analysts Patrick Badaro and Juliana Hattis said reported default rates of 2% likely understate the stress under the surface. All right, let's just take a moment to marvel at the disgusting stink of that paragraph and the word salad here. All right, look at the first half of this first sentence. While the aggregate size of the underlying market remains unquantified, making it difficult to determine the true rate of distress. In other words, we have no idea how big the problem is. But instead of saying that, they say the aggregate size of the underlying market remains unquantified. Thank you, Professor BS. Oh, my God. And then they go on to say, oh, yeah, they're also lying about their delinquency rates. You know, they report a default rate of 2%. That likely understates the stress under the surface. In other words, they're lying, and we don't know how big the problem is. Private credit funds themselves have little incentive to make noise publicly about their credit difficulties. In other words, there's no incentive to tell the truth, especially now or at present, as the market is being rocked by a wave of withdrawals from retail investors and concerns about AI disruption fears in software, a mainstay of private credit firms. We don't know how big the problem is. They're lying. It's getting worse, and there's no incentive for them to tell the truth. And this, guys, remember, the reason why we bang on this drum day in and day out is because this is the garbage that is being sold to pension funds, that's being sold to IRAs and 401ks, all under the auspices of democratizing access to these lucrative investments. Wall Street is dumping their toxic sludge into grandma's retirement. Been saying day in and day out for over a year now, and it's just getting worse. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to the Feral Grandma. Thank you very much, Grandma, for supporting the channel. She gifted 10 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Welcome to the Melon Heads, you baby melons. And be sure and say thank you to the Feral Grandma and Carolina Joe, who also gifted 5 more. Welcome to the Melon Heads, you 5 others. Thank you, Feral Grandma and Carolina Joe. I really appreciate the support of the channel and swelling the ranks of the Melon Heads this morning. Lily Von Stoop says, Medicaid cuts, Medicare Part C layoffs, Dodge warn. The Dodge, is that lowercase Dodge, like we're avoiding the warn notices, or is that like Dodge the automaker? I'm going to guess that's lowercase Dodge there. But yes, Medicare cuts, Medicare Part C layoffs. There was a cut down. I believe it was part of the Big Beautiful Bill, or maybe it was one of the pieces of legislation last year that allowed a lot of the increases to Medicare that were put in place under COVID to basically age out. They didn't extend them. And well, if you don't extend a prior surge, that is by definition a cut. And so that's possibly leading to a lot of the layoffs in the medical space, or it's possibly causing a lot of the strikes, the doctors, the nurses, or whatever organized labor that is on the receiving end of that budget cut. They're pissed, and you know they want conditions to improve and they want their pay to go up. So that could absolutely be playing a factor in the loss. What was it? Healthcare jobs down 28,000. That was a big outlier from typical jobs reports today. That one really stuck out at me. Thank you, Lily Von Stoop, for adding some color to that one and for supporting the channel. And Pocket Jacks Comics. All right. I like the name. I resemble that. Pocket Jack says, gold, silver, and oil heading IP. It's going IP in the right direction. Let's effing go. I agree. It's good to see metals rising. Let's check in on metals because things were volatile. All right. Silver's up a quarter to 50 cents. Gold's up 10 to 20 bucks. Nice up into the right. Small moves. You guys know me. I like the small moves up. All right. That's sustainable. That means it's legitimate valuation correcting in gold and silver, not meme coins and momentum chasers piling in only to get unwound later on by margin hikes. So that's where you want to live, these small gains day in and day out. Thank you, Pocket Jacks, for supporting the channel. Nacho Man, 20 more baby melons. All right. Thank you, Nacho Man. Thank you very much. Guys, everybody, just say thank you for the memberships, whether it was Nacho Man or Carolina Joe or the feral grandma who gave it to you. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate that. And a reminder for all you Melonhead members, with that membership comes one free super chat every month. If you use that, I will read and respond to your thoughts, questions, comments, concerns live on the air. Thanks again, Nacho. Armando says, what happens when you run out of missiles and bodies, or runs out of missiles, then bodies? All right, so we're already seeing this to a certain extent. You never really run out of missiles. Kind of like you never really run out of gold, or you never really run out of silver. The price just goes up, all right? The price approaches infinity as you run out. So you never get to zero, but the price goes up. And I think missiles will behave the same way. As we consume more, say, interceptors, more of these Patriots, we won't just run out one day and everything gets through. What's going to happen is we're going to have to make the hard choice. Right now, we have to protect our military installations. We have to protect energy infrastructure. We have to protect ships. And we have to protect population centers, all of which, I mean, the Iranians are just blowing up freaking everything. I mean, they are a toddler throwing a fit in the supermarket, except instead of hands and legs flailing around, it's drones and missiles. So as we start to run out of interceptors, we're going to have to make a hard decision about what we're going to protect. We can't protect everything, and a lot of stuff is going to get through, and already stuff is going to get through. I mean, war is hell, and there are casualties on both sides. This is no exception. And, you know, lobbing cluster munitions at population centers is just, that's a new low, even for this century. But, yeah, we'll never really get to zero. They're going to start triaging what they choose to intercept or not. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel. Nacho Man says, we want to know the shirt color, Jack. I'm going to say this one is blue. All right? Upon further introspection, the shirt is blue. I'm never going to be able to wear this shirt anymore if we have this debate every time I wear this shirt. But, hey, thank you, Nacho Man. Anyway, I appreciate that very much. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Hey, don't forget, today's Friday. That means 2 p.m. Eastern time. Our weekly get-together on Zoom for all my magnanimous melon heads on Patreon. Buy me a coffee and YouTube memberships. Links are down below. Should just feel so inclined. We're probably going to have a lot to talk about today. Thank you very much for the super chats, everybody. And don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small, dream big.